Boom. Joe and Mike, buildassetsonline.com. Another Q&A coming at you today. You guys think I'm going to cater to your demands of not eating the melon on stream? Well, that's not happening because I'm hungry. I need something to keep the palate refreshed. So there's going to be a lot of munching this stream.
The melon is polarizing. I think some people like the melon because I think it shows the humility. It shows the authenticity of our brand. And this is what we stand for. Eating a melon, taking it easy, and answering some questions. So, Joe, while we wait for people to funnel in.
I'm going to go over here so it doesn't.
Yeah, whatever you do, just don't slap the mic today. I'm going to go crazy.
If the chewing gets too loud, I'll stop. I'll do something about it.
You need like a button.
I can mute the mic, then I'm going to slap it.
Yeah. I'd rather hear you chew than hear you slap that mic again. But anyway, yeah, we'll wait for people to come in, for people to ask questions. So guys and gals, please leave any questions you might have. That way we can get the ball rolling on this Q&A. We got Relief Plaza themselves, this Bao Gang. Glad I could watch between meetings. Relief Plaza is a busy guy. He's got a lot of meetings. And really, I think, Joe, when we first got into this, I remember you saying one of your main motivations was to not have to do meetings anymore. And what this turned into is just us in meetings like all day.
Yeah, there's a lot of meetings, but yeah, the meetings before were, I mean, at the company I used to work at, the meetings were so bad. I can't even imagine what it must be like now. You know, I don't want to speak to that too much, but I mean, it was just like, for example, this company doesn't exist anymore, so I guess I could talk about it. There was like an acronym that people would use. And it was a trust, candor, and ownership. So if you say we're in a meeting, right? And I want to be like frank with you. I'm like, yo, you're doing a terrible job. I would say, you know, Mike, in the spirit of TCO, I feel like you didn't perform on this task the way you were supposed to.
Yeah. That's part of the corporate world, right? It's like, how do you dance around telling people they fucking suck? While, you know, trying to do it in a nice way. There's so many of those corporate things I'm not up on. But yeah, I guess what this turned into, originally, you know, we were kind of on our own. We were doing our own thing. And as your business operation grows and opportunities come up, you just wind up doing a bunch of meetings again. Like even now that we kind of work for ourselves, there's always, I have to have a friggin' calendar now. It's ridiculous. If I don't have a calendar, my life falls apart. So,
well, you know, I think that's why while we have our dropshipping store running at a full clip, we are trying to diversify in things that I'm not going to listen. This is not what the stream is about, but dropshipping is the best core of any online business, of any online business portfolio. Then you learn a few things. You have a few ideas of your own. You can start getting into things that you can't necessarily teach people. Like we could teach a course on dropshipping because frankly, it's not going to affect us. You know, there's so many industries, like so many different angles you could take. Like it literally, like there's nothing like, there's no way to create like too much competition in it. But there's some other things that we're doing that like, man, I can't show people this. Like, because it's, but that first you create the core, you learn Google Ads, you learn SEO, you learn about how things are flowing online. And then that's when you get into the, you know, the unteachable techniques that you have to figure out on your own, frankly.
Yeah. It's like in the beginning, we would go on Warrior Forum. And for people that aren't familiar with that, Warrior Forum is like an OG internet marketing, kind of website, and they would sell these offers. Like people would come on there and have these long sales letters or videos that's like, we're going to, you know, how we make $20,000 a month with some stupid thing. And it's kind of like all, it's not a real business basically. And the price of the course would be like $27. And it's like a PDF or something like that. Long story short, we don't recommend that for beginners because they don't have the skill set. Like, you have to learn, like Joe said, how to build the foundation. The best way to build the foundation is with high dropshipping. I'm going to get into all the reasons why, because I talk about it on every video. But once you actually learn the skills and you build the foundation, it's all full circle, just like the meetings, where now, since we know how to do a bunch of things well, we can go into like, we can almost go back to the Warrior Forum, see what type of bullshit business opportunity someone is promoting, and like go and implement it the right way and make money with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like when we take a course now, it's like, if I pay $10,000 for a course, even if the course is absolutely terrible, there's no way that it's not going to evolve into something else over time. That's how I view it. Every new piece of knowledge, even if it's like not that great, not that easy to apply, it's always going to, if you stay at it long enough, it's always going to turn, you know, flip into something good.
Yeah. I mean, 10,000 is an extreme example, but like throughout our years, we've taken so many courses, and this is why we're such a big proponent of learning through courses, is because it always comes back to be valuable. Even if it's a terrible course, to be honest, it's like, you're going to take that information, and maybe that's not the thing that like makes you money right then and there, but that knowledge and that information becomes valuable down the road as long as you stay in the game. So, well, I think that, you know, our program is extremely valuable, and I know that it is because we've had so many students sell their stores for six figures, and, you know, a lot of our students are now trying to teach others how to drop ship. Like, I don't care about that, but
God bless.
God bless, you know, but yeah. Even if you get into something and it's like not that valuable, if you could stay in the game, it all comes full circle. So we're waiting for some more questions to roll in. I see some are coming in. If you want to just check in, say hello. We love to see who's hanging out with us. We got Timothy Park here. We got Fernando. We got Matt asking, how old was that picture? Mike had hair. Well, it was only a few short years ago, Matt. Matt's always
Mike's hair fell out like that, pretty aggressively.
Yeah, once that DHT started really accumulating, it was all gone. So we got Polly Wops.
You know what's crazy? Actually, speaking of hair, remember I bought that thing, like the laser comb that was supposed to grow your hair back.
It's like when we lived in our mother's basement,
mm-hmm. Like the red light comb. It's supposed to.
Yeah.
I feel like that thing still exists. I don't know if it's ever worked.
The red light therapy is still a popular thing for hair regrowth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get advertisements for it all the time, but it's like a helmet now.
So does it work?
I mean, I wish I knew that answer. I'm at the fly to Turkey and get a $3,000 hair transplant.
You know what? I saw a sign actually the other day for hair transplant stuff. It was like,
oh yeah, those are all over.
Yeah. It was like $4,000 for 1,000 grafts, it said. So I don't know what that means, but
we would need a lot of grafts, Joe.
It didn't seem like that much.
1,000 grafts isn't that much. I think we need like 7,000-8,000 to rejuvenate. But anyway, we're almost 10 minutes in. Let's dive into this and stop boring these people. Anyway, Javonkiel, when are you guys going to do a video about the net earnings of 2023?
For everything? Or for the one, because we did the one, did we do like a revenue thing?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's what he's asking about.
We'll probably just say it. Like, I don't think we're gonna do a whole video on it, but maybe our next couple streams once everything is calculated.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough thing to iron out, especially when you have so many transactions happening and stuff like that. It's like finance is we were talking about this on the Jared podcast 2 weeks ago. Finances are the number one thing that makes.
Well, it's not that hard. I mean, we know what it is relative.
I mean, to a degree, right? But like, I'm just saying, keeping track of finances and high ticket dropshipping breaks a lot of people because they see money in the account and they're not keeping track of, you know, is that something I got to pay later? Is that actually, you know, not keeping a good accounting of what it is? And then they start, you know, buying the Lambo. And then, you know, someone, a supplier charges their card for $40,000 because that's what you owed. And next thing you know, you're underwater. And these people are trying to teach courses, which God bless. But anyway, yeah, we'll get into this in a future video. We're almost done ironing out these numbers. Got tax season coming up. Maybe we should do a tax video where you give out tax advice. Timothy, would you rather be in a niche that is need-based and growing, but slightly low average price, still high ticket, or really high ticket, slowly declining, but not need-based, just luxury? Let me think about this. A niche that's need-based and growing, but slightly low average price. What is a low average price? That's important. To me, yeah, if it's under $1,000 and it's need-based and growing, like, well, the whole thing is, if you build a store the way that we show you how to do it, you should be able to have a combination of all these things. I want to have slightly lower than average products in terms of order value on there. I want to have things that can be more trendy, things that are more high ticket, as long as it fits under the same umbrella and I'm still authoritative in that space. So that's kind of the beauty of what we do is like, we're not stuck trying to look at trends and look at keyword volumes and all this nonsense. We're just kind of, it's all about building authority, creating what we call like a site roadmap to make sure that no matter which way we go, there's always a pivot that we can do if we don't like where we're at in terms of our store's results.
I think it's all about, I hate answering people's questions like this, but I feel like for me, it's not even worth asking that question. Like when I do things online, I'm trying to do it as fast as possible to get it to like a steady state. So in this case, I want to choose a good domain. I want to get the store built. I want to get the ads going, and then I'll continue to add products and suppliers if I need to. But I want to get to that steady state of where things are mostly built, and then I can iterate and build on top of that. So until I get to that point, I feel like I don't even like to think too much about really anything. I mean, I need like a direction. Like I need to like, you need to say, oh, like, all right, the destination is north. So I'll keep going north. I don't know exactly where the end point is, but as long as I know the right direction, I'm going to just keep going there. So that I just, these types of questions and these types of thoughts, I feel like it's almost a little bit the wrong way of thinking about it.
Yeah. And I'll give a particular example. So we've talked a lot about how we used to sell, like stand-up desks, right? We were talking about that in one of our previous streams recently, how we had a desk that was like $200 that we would sell. So yeah. At the time, like standing desks were like really were trending. I wouldn't say it was need-based because you don't need to have a standing desk, but it was a trendy thing. And, you know, but that was a low price point, right? So like we had the cheap standing desks and then we had really expensive standing desks. And then we had even more expensive like standing conference tables. So none of those things were need-based, but I would say, you know, generally office equipment is need-based. So within that, if I had like an office store, then I can have like laminators. I could have filing cabinets, like all these things that aren't trendy, aren't in a a decline in or an incline in popularity, but people still need them. And then, yeah, like the price range stuff, again, if I could have a $200 filing cabinet, I could have a $2,000 fireproof filing cabinet, I could have a $10,000 laminator, I can have a, you know, a $300 like drawing thing that like architects use or whatever. You see what I'm saying? So you can diversify throughout all these stipulations that you're describing under one roof, and you're protecting yourself that way. Anything else to add before we move on?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Hassan, does your store sell a wide range of products, or does it specialize in a specific niche? Also, what is your average order value? Well, I feel like I just got into that pretty in depth in my rant there.
Usually when we recommend you pick something, if you think of a specific niche where you might really, if you have a store that's going to sell like a lot of the same thing, a good example of this is like e-bikes, because there's probably like hundreds of e-bike brands and lots of different varieties of e-bikes. So that would be a store where you could specialize in a specific niche. So the types of stores that we've built, I mean, we've done lots of different variations, but one of the ones that we went over, I think maybe a couple months ago at this point, is we used to have a store called Bar Store. And it would sell like anything home bar related, but then would also sell like patio heaters. So yeah, we've done it both ways, but what you really need to make sure of is, like, for example, you know, there's not that many brands of home bars. There's way more brands of e-bikes. So you're not likely to build a consistent store around just home bars, because there's not that many brands, not that many varieties.
We even looked at a site one time, this is a couple years ago, that was just selling sinks. And so sinks is a huge industry. There's so many different product types. So that's like one niche, but you can have a range of different types of sinks. Like, you have farmhouse sinks, the glass bowl sinks, and, you know, a utility sink, a slop sink, whatever. So yeah, it kind of comes down to that type of thing. I mean, I even saw someone that has a successful store, and it was just based off of like farmhouse sinks. That's because there was a lot, and they probably already knew going into it that it was going to be successful. Like, I wouldn't recommend someone just do a straight farmhouse sink website if they're new to dropshipping. But again, I say that to say, we like to give ourselves a lot of suppliers to go after, and, you know, whether that's one sort of big niche or a bunch of different medium-sized niches that fit under the same umbrella. And then in terms of average order value, I mean, like, for us right now, probably between $3,500 and $4,500. But I mean, we sell stuff that's $200 all the time. Like, I'm not concerned about it. It's just, you want to have a range, especially when you're starting out, because people think they're just going to come in and they're going to sell $10,000 items, and it's not as easy as you may think. That sales process is a lot different than selling a $200 item. We did that podcast with Nick a few weeks ago where he was talking about how a lot of his products were really very high ticket, and he was able to get more consistency in his store by reducing that ticket size down to, you know, the $1,000 range. So, you know, anything from $500 to $1,500 is a really sweet spot for making like easy sales online. People aren't going to harass you about, you know, all the different trust things they may be concerned about. They're just going to buy, basically. So that's a good starting point. You build out your store, you see where the AOV takes you, and yeah, I'm not too concerned about AOV. MDK, always a pleasure to watch you guys live. Is it possible to compete on a product where one or two suppliers heavily advertise on Google Shopping B2B? Yeah, we do it all the time. We've done it historically in stores that we've sold. I say this all the time, but on the store that we sold for $650,000, our main competitor was the supplier. They were heavily advertising on Google. They had map, but they were constantly undercutting their map, doing their own sales on their own website. So it doesn't mean that they can't be a good supplier for you. Like, those aren't great things, but we were able to still make a lot of sales with that supplier because they were giving good margins. They had MAP when, you know, they would abide by it, but it wasn't like a total race to the bottom with all the other people competing and selling that product. And they had really good products for their industry. So whatever they were selling compared to competitor products, their product was cheaper. So that's why we were able to get a lot of sales off of like generic type keywords. So to go back to the sink example, if you had a sink supplier and they were doing their own advertising on Google and, you know, I don't know what heavy advertising is, that's a relative term, but if you have a really good sink and let's say it's a utility sink and the standard utility sink is $500, but this company, they're selling the utility sink for $300 and your margin on that is, you know, $150. It's very likely because your product is well priced in the marketplace, you're going to be able to make sales for like generic terms like utility sink or, you know, whatever metal utility sink, like these long tail generic terms. And those types of things can be wide open. Like, you don't know what the supplier is doing in terms of their advertising or a competitor is doing in terms of their advertising, the terms that they're going for. So you really can't get too caught up in that type of thing. Polly Wops, what method is yours to build assets online?
Is that a Pokemon?
That's a Poliwag.
Okay, okay. Is this a take on that?
You're asking me. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I'm thinking more like...
Well, we should also get to his...
I was getting to it.
He has a follow-up question.
I think high-ticket dropshipping is above my skill set. I will listen a bit through. Sorry for dumb questions. If high-ticket dropshipping is above your skill set, then I don't know how else you're going to build assets online.
Yeah. I can explain why high-ticket dropshipping is the easiest method to get started online. So you have a couple directions that you can go with if you want to start making an income on the internet. You can either do stuff with social media or you could do stuff with search engines. So those are the two places where people are going to find anything that you're going to put online, whether it's a product or some content or whatever. And so social media stuff is a whole different set of skills that you would need to learn that it's very complicated to do social media marketing well. And also keep in mind that people on social media are not necessarily shopping for products. People on search engines oftentimes are directly shopping for products. So like if they're on Google and they're typing in slop sink, you know that they may very well be buying a slop sink sometime in the future. So if you can learn Google ads, you can learn SEO, you can get in front of that person that's searching for a product. That's way easier than going on social media and trying to convince someone that they should buy like a swimsuit or whatever. I don't think I really have to explain why that's easier, but just take my word. It's a lot easier to get in front of someone with Google when you're selling the product that they're trying to buy. So that's what makes this like very, very beginner friendly. And then once you get that down, you make a few sales, you build up a high ticket dropshipping store. Then you have an understanding of how things move online and you can kind of go from there. Anything to add to that?
I was just going to say, there's no better way to build an asset than with high ticket dropshipping when your skill set is low. This is the perfect place to build your skill set in a low risk environment.
I mean, we were talking, we were doing something yesterday with Facebook ads. And, you know, we were talking about all these years, like Facebook ad, like if you're trying to build a business on Facebook ads or like anything like that, like it is so difficult. It's so, so difficult. Like you need large pockets, number one. you need to understand human psychology at like a deep, deep level. Number two. And it's frankly, Facebook ads is so much more technical than Google ads. I mean, yeah.
The payout for, you know, having a good Facebook ad and building your business off social media can be really, really, really high. And I think that's why a lot of people are attracted to it, because they see these companies that are running a lot of budget through Facebook and Instagram and whatnot. And, you know, there's people that have grown through that, but people don't see the wasted money and the failures that come through Facebook ads. And I mean, it comes down to like even the low ticket dropshipping stuff, like the amount of people that fail trying to do the Facebook ad way of acquiring customers is so large that you just have to take it from us that if you can stay consistent with Google ads, you're a lot more likely to see success over the long term. And that's what we're about when it comes to coaching.
And people know, this is something that no one really talks about. People know that social media, like platforms like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, they have like an addictive element to them, like for the user. But for the untrained advertiser, they also have a very, very addictive element to them. And if you're just, you know, you're what's the term for like someone that's new, like green? If you're green and you're getting into this kind of thing and you launch it to Facebook ad, you're going to be seeing like, you know, Jerry from South Carolina liked your post, blah, blah, blah. This is engaging with this. Like, and you're like, oh, like things are happening. This is good. Then you're going to be end up, you spent $500. You didn't even get one sale of it. Oh, but people engage with my stuff.
Yeah.
So it's something that no one really talks about. But from the standpoint of a beginner trying to get into online business, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. These people who run these social media platforms know how to make things addictive to the user, but the user is not really the one that pays them. It's the advertisers that pay them. So you better believe they have things baked in there that, you know, make the advertiser feel like they're in a casino.
Yeah. That's a good point. For inbound next to a store, do you guys recommend a Shopify blog or integrating other solutions such as WordPress?
No. So you would always, especially nowadays, if you're going to be building a blog on your store that you want to get organic traffic with, you always have to build it on your Shopify store, especially after all these Google updates. Google really, really favors ranking real businesses, air quotes. So, you know, you have a phone number, you have contact us, track your order, you have people coming in from your ads. All of these are very, very, very positive signals to Google. So building a blog on top of that, all things being equal, you're going to easily outrank any Joe Schmo who builds a WordPress blog on the same topic. So
good answer. Do you guys utilize social media ads for your sites? For dropshipping, some light retargeting.
We've had $5 a day in retargeting going for like 6 years. I don't think I've ever looked at it.
It's probably, who knows if it's even working at this point.
You know, I actually have the Facebook ad platform open right now. I don't know. I hate navigating this.
I mean, but don't forget that YouTube is also a social media and that you can use YouTube for your dropshipping store as well. I mean, we teach this in our program, but so that's a good way to do like social media retargeting as well. But the answer is no. It's really not something that we recommend for beginners. So you're going to be better off just spending more time like getting deeper into the Google Ads platform than really anything. AO said, where can you find other people to collaborate with regarding high ticket dropshipping? Well, you can go to buildassetsonline.com. You can apply to join our group. And really, that's the best place that you want to be, because it's going to be you're gonna be able to connect with other people that are actually taking this seriously. And I think masterminding is an extremely important thing to do, not just for beginners, but for really anybody that wants to accomplish a business task. Because if you have four or five minds collaborating on the same goal, you're able to get much further, much quicker. It's better for your motivation. There's a lot of reasons why you should be not doing this alone. So that's what I'd have to say. Go to buildassetsonline.com. You can book a free strategy call with us. And you know, you want to be in a community of like-minded people that are actually serious and working towards the same goal. Because just as it can be really helpful to be working with people that are all aligned on the same goal, if you're working with people that are not aligned, that's going to be a negative effect. So you want to make sure you're working with the right people. Khalid Latif, what's the ideal budget and skill needed to start dropshipping? Well, as we said, this is where you learn the skills. So you don't have to come in here with skills. Like, we didn't come in here with any skills on Shopify, any skills on Google Ads, or none of that. So that's that. And then in terms of budget, whatever you're comfortable with, man. $300 a month, $500 a month, whatever is going to keep you in the game and not quit. Alex said, trying to learn ads on social media has steered me away from dropshipping. Thanks for the tips. You're very welcome. Relief Plaza, what would you say are the risks with white glove delivery? I'm sure some suppliers offer it, but some don't. What type of issues can you run into when using third-party services? I mean, the one issue is that they just do a shit job, but I don't think it's really likely. I mean, we've done white glove deliveries over the years, and they usually go pretty well. It's just the one thing that you can't control is like what the price of it's going to be, because it's dependent on the weight of the item. It's dependent on where it's shipping from to get to the white glove service and stuff like that. So it's hard to like say, hey, pay an extra $300 for the white glove service. It's kind of, you have to get a quote done. It's like a lot of logistics. So that's kind of my main concern with it. But if, yeah, he said, I called my competitor websites and they seem to have made it work. I probably won't know the issues until I actually start those services. Yeah. It's less of issues in terms of the services and more just like getting the quote. So you can say, contact us for white glove service options or something. That's probably what I would do. Litmo says, I started high-ticket dropshipping in my country using a marketplace, something similar to Amazon. After 3 months, I have about 6,000 in sales, but profit less than 10%. Now it's time to step back and create a new strategy. Marketplaces are very demanding and strict. Sometimes one negative review can shut down the account. Plenty of rules. There's always on the customer's side in terms of conflict situations. So I'm very stressed. I'm wondering how much different it would be to do high-ticket dropshipping using your own store. I guess it should be less demanding when it comes to customer service and no one can shut down my store because of one difficult customer. Can you share some thoughts on that? That's really the exact reason that we got into high ticket dropshipping. It was because we got suspended off of Amazon for kind of bullshit. They took our money from, you know, like tens of thousands of dollars. And so we wanted something that couldn't be shut down that easy. So there's that. And yeah, it's just like you said, one negative customer is really, it means nothing. And I mean, I've seen people running stores that are frankly doing a terrible job with customer service and people still come in and buy from them. So I'm not saying to do a terrible job with customer service, but it's just something that you can still somehow have a business.
I think we can actually get a little bit more in depth here, because so we could talk about kind of like the worst case scenarios and kind of some of the stuff that we've seen. So in the worst case scenarios, and this is, I would say we've never had this happen. We've never heard of anyone that had this happen. But I mean, if you're selling some sort of banned product by Shopify, like for example, maybe like vapes or something, like there's certain products that Shopify probably doesn't let you sell, probably like vapes and like gun stuff or something like that. So if you're not doing that, then you don't have to worry about that. Like Shopify won't just like delete your store. So it's, this is all very unlikely. What can be more common and still very unlikely, but a situation where that we've almost had, is if you have a lot of customers and say you like, you know, you have a back order issue or you don't ship a lot of stuff, you can get a lot of chargebacks. And then what could happen with that is Shopify Payments might stop wanting to work with you. If that happens, you can always go to another payment processor. As a matter of fact, one of our students who he sold his store for, I think, over $500,000. He had an issue with Shopify Payments very early on. Probably an issue that wouldn't happen today because he started the store like during COVID and there was a lot of stringent stuff going on back then. But long story short, he was able to just add a different payment processor to his Shopify store, and he kind of continued as normal. So those are kind of the different scenarios. Now, we've almost had a situation with one of our stores, just to show you kind of how bad it could get. During COVID, we had a situation where we took a ton of back orders and we were getting a lot of chargebacks. And I think our chargebacks exceeded 1% of our orders. And we started getting like the warning emails from Shopify, but we were able to get things back on the straight and narrow, and we were never suspended. And another kind of amazing thing is actually at the time all this was happening, if you looked up our store, like if you Googled it, the domain name, you would see like BBB, like all these review sites, like this is a hard, like basically if you research the store, you would not want to buy from there because BBB, Trustpilot, like my order never shipped, like blah, blah, blah. And people were still buying. People were still buying, and we sold the store for over 650K. So yeah, it's a lot more lenient than marketplaces.
Yeah, exactly. You can get by with having absolutely terrible like third-party reviews in dropshipping. I was actually trying to find that brand that we used to sell that was absolutely here. Wait. I'm going to pull up a screenshot. It seems like they deleted their Google My Business profile.
Who?
Lava Heat. They had like a Google My Business profile that was like the worst I've ever seen. It was just like a one star across the board. But let's see if I can pull that up. How do I add? Well, you take the next question as I try to mess with this.
How do you handle repeated supplier rejections without risking any potential strain on relationship due to perceived persistence? I mean, how persistent are you getting? Like you just basically... So I would do it like this. If a supplier rejects you, you know, I would say to them, first of all, I would want to get the rejection like on the phone, ideally. If it's over email, you can also do this. But if they say, oh, we're not taking any e-commerce dealers at this time, you could say something like, I understand. I'm really confident that it would work really well for us together. Would it be possible, perhaps we can do like a 90-day trial or a 180-day trial? And if it's not working out, then, you know, no harm, no foul. So that's kind of the first line of defense that I would try. After that, I would just call every quarter, every 6 months, you know, kind of updating them. Hey, you know, I know you said last time we're not taking any e-commerce dealers, but, you know, we're selling the bleep out of your competitors. And frankly, people are asking about you, your brand, but I always have to point them here, you know, would love to open the possibility of us working together back up. Yeah. So I mean, that's really it. Those are the two
they hate
things that I would do. What?
They hate that. You say, I'm they're asking about you, but I keep selling the other brand to them.
Yeah.
That'll really get under their skin. And
especially if it's like a sales guy, like a sales rep, and they get like, you know,
yeah, his bonus.
Their boss is checking the numbers and all that.
I'm trying to pull this thing up. I can't pull up an image on this thing, but if you just search Lava Heat Italia, you can look at the Yelp reviews. You can look at the Facebook reviews. On Yelp, they have a solid 1.8 star review, 42 reviews. On Facebook, they have 1.6 stars, 35 reviews. Somehow on Amazon, they have a 4.6 star rating.
Interesting.
But I mean, if you look at some of their products on Amazon, 2.5 stars, 2 stars.
Well, the store rating, I think it's hard to like, not hard, but it's not like an intuitive thing that people do to leave a star. I think I don't really remember. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah. They have 28 reviews, 3 stars. And it's like, but this stuff would sell. My point is that we were selling them. They were a terrible company. I mean, borderline just illegal how bad they were. Not borderline, like they were literally doing illegal shit. So what's happening here? How do I get a call on Do Not Disturb, you know? What's the point of the iPhone? Anyway, people were coming, like major hotel brands, like huge companies were coming and buying these products, like asking for them by name. I want the Lava Heat Italia, this. So outside of Amazon and the platforms that control you, bad reviews aren't like that big of a deal. Porta deals. Wait a second. Did we have a... Wait. Did we skip ahead?
I don't think so.
I wanted to answer this. This is what I was looking for. Fernando says, I'm pressured to move much faster in getting a store started since it seems to be getting ultra competitive due to the influx of new gurus pitching this business model. Sad face. What was the phrase you said in the beginning of the video, Joe? In the spirit of
TCO.
In the spirit of TCO, Fernando, you've been in these live streams for years now. How do you not have a store up? Because you've been probably saying the same thing to yourself or a different excuse of why it's not a good time over the last several years. And this is just another version of one of these excuses. Because the fact is, you shouldn't give a shit about how many gurus there are teaching a thing. Like 8 years ago when we started, people were saying there's too many people in dropshipping. Dropshipping is dead. It's too competitive. It's saturated. And 30 million in sales later, here we are. These people pop up. These people go away. You have no idea what's going on with all these other people. All you can focus on is yourself. We see new students come in all the time, get their first sales. We just had a student come in who was in another guru's course. He joined our program. He made one change to his ad account, made a sale. He made $1,300 profit. So again, if you really want to do this, you have to just do it. There's not going to be a better time to do it.
I'll give you another example. I'll give you another perhaps positive and encouraging example, although there is some negativity to this. I think we can say now that every store that we've sold besides for every store that we've sold, whether it got sold to another person after us or just the person that we've sold it to, at some point the new owner has run that store into the ground.
Yeah.
And so what happens is you think it's competitive, but the people that know what they're doing, they sell their stores. People buy the stores, people run the stores into the ground, and then there's one competitor gone. So this is not like a static thing. You know, you just got to get in the game. Like that's what it comes down to. Yeah. The it's always changing. Like things are always in flux.
Yeah. Like 4 years ago, what would you have said about making a store? You know, the state of the world is too up in the air. You would have given all these excuses, but in hindsight, that was an amazing time to start up a store. We saw so many of our students come in at that time when suppliers literally could not get stock in. We had new students coming in, starting stores, making sales. Many of those students have gone on to sell their stores for six figures. So I think you get the point, Fernando.
Yeah, and also just you can't. What I was saying at the beginning of the stream was like, there's a lot of like unseen things that you see gurus talking about things. Even us, we're just talking about things. We're probably talking about it way more in depth than other air quote gurus. But at the same time, it's still like very surface level. And the reason for that is, it's just like, we can't even talk about the depths of what we're doing because it's just so specific to what we're doing. Like it wouldn't be, you know, like for example, you know, I went, you go to a trade show. Oh, I was just talking to this new supplier. I think this is a big opportunity. Or, you know, what if we use the technique that we use to sell this product to do something else with Google Ads? There's just so many things that pop up and so many opportunities you could take, but you got to like be actively doing stuff to even recognize and go after those things.
I went to a trade show the other day and we've had a store for 8 years. I found this was a shit trade show too. Like it wasn't even that great for the industry. I found multiple new suppliers and multiple different ideas for different product types just from that one trade show. From a store that we've had for 8 years. Like you'd think I've figured them all out. I've gotten in with every supplier. I've known about every supplier. It's not like that. And if that's me, someone that's been doing it for 8 years, think about what some noob who's been doing it for 3 months, like who gives a shit about them? They're not going to handle the finances. They're going to go bankrupt. They're done. They're out. It's like, you can't, like Joe said, it's fluid. You can't even think about what other people are doing. Anyway, I want to get to this one too. Do you recommend creating stores for consistent income or create stores in order to sell them? Well, you can't have one without the other. So you can't sell a store without it having consistent income. So the whole point is that if you get a store to bring you consistent profit, it becomes an asset that you can sell. So whether you decide to sell it or not is up to you, but you want to be building an asset versus not building an asset, right? Like driving Uber, while it's not nothing wrong with it, it's not an asset, right? You can make $3,000 a month doing Uber, but if you come down to the where you say, hey, I don't want to do Uber anymore, then you have to just either wind down and you're gonna make less money, or you have to stop altogether and now that's gone. Versus if you're making $3,000 a month from an asset that you can sell the asset, you're gonna get a payout on what it would have made for years anyway. You know, you get paid out on 24 times to 40 times its monthly profit. And now you can go do something else. Or maybe you already have another store that you're working on. So that's the compounding power of building an income stream. That's an asset. Porta Deals, do you have a situation where when the customer returns a product but your supplier doesn't want to take it, because it's a little dirty or it was sent too late, how do you deal with them? Well, if your return policy mimics what your supplier's return policy is for you, then you won't have this issue. So if your return policy, the supplier's return policy is, hey, we're not going to take anything back that's been opened, then that's what you say on your store for that brand. All products from this brand must be returned within 30 days, unopened. 10% restocking fee. if that's what the supplier is doing. Do you sometimes leave the product at the end and you have to stock it somewhere? I mean, we've taken stock of things, like we've taken our own returns where it's viable, like it's not a 300-pound thing that ships on a pallet. Like I'll take a UPS return and I'll just put it in my garage. I'll sell it as a you know, an open box unit, whatever. And then it sells and then I ship it back out. So like, it's not the end of the world, but on stuff that is big and you're not going to, you know, you can't put it in your garage or you can't put it in a storage unit, then just have a return policy, be strict about it. And it is what it is. What is a chargeback and what do you do for it? Well, a chargeback is when somebody has a charge on their credit card and they tell the credit card company, hey, this is bullshit because the product is defective or it's fraud or they didn't get it for a number of reasons. And so the credit card takes their money back and you have to fight that. Pollywop, I want to laugh at people working for a boss. It's my lifelong dream.
Someone's got to do it.
Right. Like I don't look down on people that have regular jobs at all. Like, yes, the people have to work regular jobs and some people just aren't not built, but like, they just don't want to do what we do. Like, it's just, it comes with its own set of drawbacks. And
hey, listen, it's great. What we do is great for me, but you know, you got to pay the cost to be the boss. I mean,
well said.
There are just plenty of people that, not that they're not willing to put in the time, but they're not willing to invest like the mental energy and the mental obsession that we've put into this. That's what it comes down to.
Right. We're always on. We're always in the jungle looking for that next meal.
Day one mentality. That's day one mentality. The Silicon Valley term. That's our mindset, man. Just day one mentality every day.
Right.
No, but I would say you just got to obsess over thing. You know, you got to like, not that you have to put every hour of every day into it. Like, even if you work on something like 1 to 2 hours a day, you have a regular job, you're commuting or whatever. Like when I was doing that, like when I first started online business, I was doing retail arbitrage. So I'd go on my lunch break. I feel like a broken record telling this story. Go on my lunch break, go shopping, go to yard sales. After work, I'll go shopping, go to yard sales, look for stuff to resell online. But in between that, I was still obsessing about it. On my way to work, I was listening to, you know, podcasts about business, about finance. You know, I was in a constant state of, I got to know like everything I can about what I'm doing here. And not only that, but taking a lot of action and, you know, reflecting on the action that I take.
Well said, Joey. David said, hey, I booked a sales call, but I never got a call. I was interested in your course. Well, I don't know why that is. I don't see you, but if you go to buildassetsonline.com, just book a new one and we'll talk. And Parnik said, do you still do calls? Yes, just go to buildassetsonline.com. We got to wind down on this, Joe. I got a hard stop here.
Okay.
At the 1 o'clock hour. But
I don't know what Pollywops is referring to as far as the online asset playbook.
That's what I was looking at that. I don't even want to. I don't know. I don't know what people do, how they find us. Joe, see, you make the thumbs up thing and it does the thumbs up.
This is how I rest my hand. You ever
You know what cracks me up? Somebody else that I was on a Zoom with the other day.
Yeah. It doesn't even do it when I want it to.
There you go.
There you go. You ever see these like super fat comedians and they like they always got the mic resting on their belly. They're like, I can't even do it. But they're just like that. It's like resting like this.
I mean, if when you're fat, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because you have a table on your body.
Yeah.
Like think about Joe, if you had a stand on your own body to eat a melon.
That would be
how
sick.
Nice that would be. You just melons right here, you just sit there and
it would probably like go up a little like this. I could just
that's a good product idea. You should have like a prosthetic to be fat when you want. And then you can just take it off. You can enjoy all the perks of being fat.
That would be great. You could get like a nice workout too, like walking around with it.
Get a seat, extra seat at the airport or at the on an airplane.
Yeah,
they'll give you two seats. But all right,
wait. You can hop off. I'll get the rest of the questions if you want.
No, I'm good.
Random question: is there a payment process that allows people to pay with their debit cards? I don't know why you're asking this, but
yeah, why would you want that?
Every payment processor allows this. You can pay with your debit card, like with Stripe, with Shopify payments, with PayPal. I'm curious why you're asking. I feel like I'm inferring the answer in my head, but I'm curious as to why you're asking. So type that in if you can. Martin Duncan, do you need to be a little delusional to be successful as such? Well, I guess it depends how you define success. Successful, first of all, to be successful, my air quotes are kind of like that. My fingers are flopping everywhere. To be successful at the things that we're doing, I don't think you need to be delusional. You just need to spend some time on it. And what you need to remember is that I'm going to steal this from somewhere. I don't know who said this or gave this metaphor, but like, if you think about like a couple hundred years ago, if you were like a doctor and you lived in a small town, you know, you're not going to be that much more wealthy than a guy that's just like working the fields or doing some, I guess you could say, you know, lower paying job, you know, because you're all kind of part of the same system. Nowadays, with the internet, you have such leverage, and it's just about learning the tools that give you the most leverage. So if you can learn Google Ads and know how to get profitable with Google Ads, you can just put more money into Google Ads and get more money out of the other end if to simplify things. So you have a lot of leverage there because, you know, it doesn't take that much time to make like a Google Ads campaign. So that's what it comes down to, really. It just comes down to mastering the techniques that give you a lot of leverage via the internet. I mean, it's not anything crazy. Like, you know, we're not talking about changing the world with a disruptive business here. You know, we're not talking about like making a Tesla or doing OpenAI or any of these, how you normally think of like the E word, the entrepreneur. Like we're not talking about that. We're just talking about mastering the skills that give you a lot of leverage online. That's it.
Yeah. If being delusional helps you take action, then be delusional. Don't be delusional about your finances.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's always like a little bit of curiosity. Like I always want to say, is this really going to work? Like, that's always kind of how I think about it. It's always like, if we combine these things in the right soup, is the soup going to taste good?
Yeah. But I think to think about, like, he's probably thinking about delusional, like, oh, this will never work. Like, this will never, I can never do this. And that's just like a bullshit limiting belief. You know, there's like, you're probably delusional in what you believe that you can accomplish because you've been, you know, like at a job or you just haven't done this for long enough to like realize what's possible.
Yeah, I was lucky. I think we were lucky because that delusion, that like negative delusion, was broken for us very quickly.
The delusion's broken once you make your first dollar online, basically.
Yeah. And when I did retail arbitrage, I made my first dollar online in like a week. So the illusion was shattered into a million pieces right then and there.
Yeah.
Well, and at that time, I believe I was, you know, experimenting with opening my mind. So like my whole previous years of, what is it called? Like brainwashing.
Sure.
It was just like this. It was just like, you know.
Yeah.
I was open to anything.
Well, it's a good stream. People can go to buildassetsonline.com if they want to have their delusions shattered. help them build an asset that they can sell for six figures, seven figures, who knows? But the important thing is if you build the skills of learning how to do search engine marketing, not social media, search engine marketing, you pair it with a bunch of expensive products you make a bunch of money on, it's not too hard. You build the skill set, you sell the asset, rinse and repeat. So buildassetsonline.com, see if you're a good fit. You could take it or leave it. But as always, take it easy.